On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Damien Lane on Saturday. I mean, he's a superstar jockey. His treble on Saturday, they were beautiful rides.
Say if Sandown goes and Caulfield becomes this multi-night precinct with an inner track and an outer track, you're going to have Moonee Valley wondering about its hold on night racing in the metropolitan area. There's nowhere else in the world where you'd have two metropolitan night racing venues going hand in hand.
If someone's stupid enough and determined enough to do that, I don't think there's any way anyone can absolutely stop that. But I hope something like that does occur, that you get the book thrown at you, because that's the greatest deterrent for anyone.
I think we're all in a position where we wholeheartedly support what Racing Victoria and the BRC have done. They had to protect the Melbourne Cup.
The changing of the guard at Lindsay Park, it's good because you need to get that positivity, as you say, not only for their stable and JD and Ben's confidence with their owners, but also for the storyline.
Welcome to The Verdict. As we do each and every Monday, we'll look back on the weekend, the racing and the week's issues. Mick Sharkey, Matty Stewart in the house. Gentlemen, how was your weekend? Sharkey, well done. A big thanks to Shark for his best bet getting home. Furion, also give some kudos to the Bald Eagle, who talked up Tholomew Dias in the trial files a couple of weeks ago. That's from Shane in Knoxfield. A few other text messages saying, you've helped our listeners in lockdown, Sharkey. The pressure was on after Hutchie shot the lights out. You responded, best bet Furion getting home, and you also had your each way best play of the day. Mind you, Liam O'Keefe declared.
Liam O'Keefe did too, didn't he?
The winner as well. So well done, Sharky.
Yes, the good fight. It was a good weekend, a good day on Saturday. Slight issue yesterday, though, gentlemen. You know the outdoor fire pit sort of craze that happened last lockdown? Everyone went and bought the little Bunnings fire pit and had backyard fires and things like that, because you couldn't leave the house.
Where the sausage gets on fire and causes chaos.
It wasn't so much any sausages catching on fire, but I've gone and burned all the hair off my feet sitting in thongs too close to the fire pit.
That sounds like something a stupid person would do.
Well, if the cap fits.
Glad you had a good tipping weekend, because otherwise we'd think you were a bit of an idiot.
I'm very smooth. I'm on the top of my foot now. Yeah.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Okay, that's not how we needed to start the show, Sharky.
Oh, sorry.
If Michael celebrated you as a COVID hero for your tipping, you're now just a fire pit moron.
Hey, we've got a lot to talk about.
Fire pit moron.
That'll be in the opener next week.
I was the beer pelican, now I'm the fire pit moron.
I thought yesterday's jumps racing at Pakenham was absolutely enthralling. Absolutely loved it. And the superstars of the sport all standing up. Did you have a punt yesterday, Matty?
Yes. despite my pledge to you, because I had a character building experience at Sandown on Wednesday that regarding a horse, and I pledged that I'd be off the punt for a while because I was so ashamed of myself for getting it so horribly wrong. But I did have. There was one I liked yesterday, Wolf Tone, in the main hurdle race, and now I have to be on him again next time because he'll win next time. But he just mucked up a few jumps. But it was spectacular, and it just interesting hearing you talking to the man behind the man, Declan Maher, today, and fascinating. I'm endlessly fascinated by the Maher Eustace stable and how many strings they have to the bow. They focus on, okay, we've got this big jumps program, let's just tear it apart, which they did. The only one that didn't come to the party was Ablaze, and that was a story in itself with Gay Waterhouse and Waterhouse Bot. So, I really enjoyed watching them yesterday. A couple of minor incidents, but it was a really great celebration of really good quality jumping. The only thing I did notice is I still think our jumpers a lot of them are scrappy jumpers. There's still a lot of scrappy jumping there yesterday. It was generally a terrific watch, but a lot of them were just not quite pitching their jumps right, even some of the winners. So maybe there's a little area there of potential improvement with some of our jumpers. But Kieran got sick of it turning up at the winners interviews. At one point he tried to shove Deck in and Deck disappeared. But the how well-rounded the Maher Eustace stable is to attack any target and just completely trample all over it, and that's what they did yesterday. So, it was a terrific watch, and they were really the best of the best yesterday, weren't they? A lot of those jumpers. So good on them, and good on Maher Eustace for pretty much providing basically the backbone for that meeting yesterday. You know, they had so many top horses yesterday. So, yeah, it was great. And Saturday was interesting as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a few of the better performances on Saturday. A little later, we'll talk about the New South Wales Victoria Issuary Spring Carnival. Have your say. There's a Twitter poll out there on RSN's Twitter handle. You can join the conversation on Facebook as well. Mm. Any comments that you want to send through via Twitter or comments or SMS is 0416 90 50 52. We will get to. Sharky, unbelievable having a chat to Declan Maher about the horses that are performing in these jumps races and the international form lines that they bring to the table and the breeding as well.
It's crazy, isn't it? Galileos and things that have run in derbies and derby trials and major group staying races overseas, and then out they come as jumpers in Australia. And eventually, it's fair to say, but they have been tried over the flat, these horses, and for whatever reason haven't fired, but they do add some serious clout, don't they, on the score of form to, you know, the jumps racing catalogue across the season.
Tell you what was interesting, a mate of mine texted this through. He said, I was so bored that I calculated the win pools for Warwick Nabil compared to Pakenham, flat meeting versus jumps meeting. And the jumps at Pakenham overall win pool just on the tote was 236K for the day and 193 for Warwick Nabil, which obviously Warwick Nabil was a very much secondary meeting and Pakenham was a very well promoted jumps only meeting. But the fact that the jumps card, I don't think that comparison's ever been able to be made before, where the jumps attracted more wagering than the flat. So I don't think you can overread into it, given the status of the Warwick Nabil meeting, but I think it's got to be an encouraging sign for jumps racing.
A season or two ago, that was a real promotional point, wasn't it, that the jumps crew were pushing, was that, you know, it's a little easier to find a winner because the favourites often come to the fore, and if you pay it, and I know Mike Simons, who's a massive fan of jumps racing, is big on this too. If you actually do the form for jumps racing, you know who is a clean jumper, who's not, what sort of quirks they have, and yeah, you can make a really good buck during jump season.
I find it a bit hard with our jump season because it seems so to lack continuity. It sort of starts at Warrnambool and Oakbank when, you know, right at the start where they're having grand final meetings right at the start, then there always seems a gap between the next thing. So I actually, you know, off the back of the success of, you know, the wagering and so on, maybe there should be sort of a little bit more continuity. The flow of the jump season seems to be interrupted a fair bit.
I agree, but I reckon that meetings like Pakenham yesterday was all jumps. I think that's the way to do it. Isolate your Sundays, have an all jumps card and run it like that rather than having one or two on a program here and there. I understand that it's not always possible to have an entire jumps meeting, but I think it makes sense to run it like that.
For feature meetings, because you don't want to have six maiden hurdles, because then there will be no one that really has that much interest and wants to punt on it compared to a flat meeting. But if you've got the pinnacle days, like yesterday and a few other days, I can see having a sole jumps racing. But you can't have a jumps race standalone meeting with eight maidens.
No, you probably can't. But
I don't, yeah, I'm a bit in the opposite corner to that. I think they get lost when they are the also-rans mainly a flat program.
I like it. I think it gives a point of difference.
I think they're split punting divisions, though. I think
Well, look at the SMSs that are coming through here. First one that comes through saying, don't keep talking up jumps racing. Peter Blandys will go on and put $1 million steeplechase.
Yeah.
There's another one here from Ted saying, I don't know why you're talking about jumps racing. No one bets on it. Well, Matt just read out the turnover there. And another one saying, don't bother discussing Flemington on Saturday. The big meeting of the weekend was yesterday over the jumps. So it does split, I suppose, people's thoughts.
So my view is, and I know a lot of people feel the same way, is that if you consider it is almost a separate entity, then you do probably put all your eggs in the one basket. You do go your Casterton, Coleraine, Pakenham, Hamilton, Warrnambool, and the jumps meetings are jumps meetings, and you try and sell it as a jumps product. I don't agree with you. I think that you need to put all your jumps eggs in one basket on a
given
day.
So you want to run like yesterday, you want to have a jumps meeting and a flat meeting run side by side on a Sunday.
Yep, and you've got two different options, but they're not at the same venue. So, I think they're split camps. I think the challenge for jumps racing is to grow their camp. That's the challenge for them. The starting point's Warrnambool. That's how big it can be, and then how do you transfer them all around?
But isn't Warrnambool is maybe outside of the norm, but doesn't it work beautifully having the jumps and the racing all meshed together at Warrnambool, the flat racing?
Yep. That works there as well. So, yeah, there's obviously a few different angles.
Morning, boys. Great to hear the show kick off talking about jumps racing. How good was yesterday? All the jumps jocks are fantastic, but Steve Pateman is still the best. If I hear anyone say he gets the best rides, I'll spew up. He gets great support, but he is an all-time great.
He is. He's an amazing superstar, like Craig Durden before him and the greats before them and Jamie Evans and Nick Harnett and all those guys. But he's got a nice personality. He's got his the equestrian sort of background with him as well, and he's got that sort of, yeah, he's got a measured sort of personality, hasn't he? He's got a bit of a problem coming up, of course, with his cobalt issue. But
and is there any news on that?
Not from my knowledge, other than that he still has to, you know,
because he's been dragging on too long.
Well, it's another one that's dragged on, isn't it? So yeah.
Tom Ryan's an interesting story with the jumps racing as well. You know, from full time jockey, I guess, to being one of the leading track riders out at Lindsay Park, up at Euroa, and mixing bid spotting and bloodstock work with Inglis with riding and sort of setting up the next phase of his career while still riding really good horses over the jumps.
Exactly. I think one of the most important elements has been Waterhouse Bot, because it proves that the jumps training community can be bigger than just the reliables, like Paddy Payne, Mar Eustace, Eric Musgrove, and two or three others. The risk of jumps racing is that it's held together by too few. So if you get someone like Gay Waterhouse proving that there is a... I don't know what the background of that horse was, but I'm tipping it was a pretty fancy starting point and now has ended up with a second career over the jumps. So I think she's the best ambassador for jumps racing because she's such an unexpected participant, isn't she? So I think that was a really big part of yesterday.
Well, she's been a flag bearer for years now, always heading down to Warrnambool. And you're right, he was a pretty handy horse on the flat. And there's a lot of those from Sydney, those middle tier stayers that have a potential to turn into nice jumpers, because there's no jumps racing in Sydney, yet they seem to have a glut of that mid tier 2,000, 2,400 metre, just average Saturday class stayers.
It's a terrific feeder, isn't it? Sydney, average Sydney stayers who can then go on to become $300,000 or $400,000 earning jumpers.
He also had nearly 2 years on the sideline, Social Element. Look, before this season, before he started jumping this time around, he was on the bench for a long, long time. So great training performance to nurse him through those issues and to have him fit enough and sound enough to stand up to 3,500 metre races over the jump. So that's a fair old effort by trainer and horse.
It'd be interesting to know what the jumps strategy is for the next 2 or 3 years, you know, off the back of near extinction a few years ago and so on. Like, it seems to be in a really reasonably good spot at the moment. I'm disappointed that they didn't seize the opportunity. I know COVID's become a nightmare, but I know that my information was that Rachel Blackmore was more than prepared to go through the hoops to get down here. I haven't heard anything after this idea was floated.
She had a fall
ago
on the weekend over in the UK.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about whether they have attempted to get Rachel Blackmore out here for Ballarat, which is only a couple of weeks away. So
I think it is difficult with COVID situation now.
Probably has got more tricky.
Yeah, I think you can cut some slack with that. Eventually we can get through this situation, and it makes it a bit easier for international movement. I mean, things like that are a no-brainer because it worked so beautifully a few years ago. Yep. So, brilliant day yesterday. I can't wait to see Norway again. I think he's an absolute superstar. It will be absolutely brilliant to see him go around in the National. And Kiramar Davies may have 6 runners in the National this year, which is just phenomenal. Hey, Sharky, you dominated Flemington on Saturday. Furion, what level can he get to? Is he back?
He looks that way. I think he's still probably that listed weaker Group 3 type floater. I can't see him getting much higher than that. He'll find a race, you know, like something like a Koonji if you got a wet track. I think that'd be a good race for him. But he does need some give in the ground. And I know it was soft 5 and it was a little on the firmer side of soft 5 early in the day before we had some showers there on Saturday. But His form is dependent on getting his toe in. But it was the race for him on Saturday, and he duly won. Dr. Jewel was back to form in the same race. I think you follow him as the tracks sort of start to improve. But on Thunderstruck's the horse you want to take from the meeting. That was something else. And big raw horse, I think we've all known the potential is there, but given a genuine tempo on Saturday and a good patient ride where he was allowed to balance up well off the speed, he just went through his gears and he looked like a group horse in the making on Saturday, and still doing a bit wrong, still wanting to wander and like, yeah.
All he needed to do was draw out and get clear space. Everything that's ever held him up has been when he's been bottled up and inconvenient. Just a quick one back to Andrew Nichols just texting me. How many trainers do you think hold a jumps ticket in Australia? 137.
Really?
That's encouraging. I would have thought about 20.
Yeah, so I would have said 20 or 30.
137 trainers hold a jumps ticket, includes three in South Australia, which is important because it's hanging by a thread. A healthy number now, 450 horses either ticketed or trying for tickets. So there you go.
Oh, that is good information. Read the depths of jumps racing. Just on Thunderstruck, every time we speak to Mick Price, Mick Kent Jr., they have said this is a group horse in the making. What race could he be targeted towards? Or do you just take it nice and gently? Because we are in the middle of July.
Yeah, we are. I think given his apparent waywardness, I think he still needs a bit of polish and a bit of work before they start making any, you know, serious plans for targeting group races. And
might
I think
go better the other way.
Michael Kent was on that too, wasn't he? After the race, he sort of said, "Listen, let's get the horse right before." And it's the luxury they have. You know, he's not an Ayrton who does everything right in the run. You push the button, he accelerates, wins the race. Like, that's a ready-made horse for stakes company. Whereas this fella, he's still learning whether he. It was interesting to note after the race as well, Michael said that the horse has done this from day one, even in his jump outs and trials. He's wanted to lay in when the pressure's sort of gone on. So whether it's a quirk that possibly can't be ironed out, but they'll do their absolute best too, because he won't be able to get away with that as he steps up in class. And there's some handy horses in that race, Saturday, and I think it'll be good nice form horse from the race. But he won't be able to get away with that stepping up in grade.
Just because that track was unexpectedly softer than usual, maybe going the other way, there might be good options for him in.
Yeah, there might be.
This goes back to the different. There might be a good option for him in Sydney as well, because he lays in and he loves soft ground, so that they might have some options there.
I think it's hard to get a handle on the quality of horses when they're only 2-year-olds and they're racing over 1800. Most of them for the first time in the Byerly, and I love the concept of this race, but. Gee, it was an impressive win. Going to dance a lot the way she kicked away the last 200 metres. And obviously they're going to focus on the Oaks now with her. Shark, how did this race rate? Is this... Because I've got a bit of time for Actigali as well, the runner-up.
Yeah.
Is it just guesswork because they are so unexposed at this point in time? Or could she be a horse that could compete in the better staying races for 3-year-olds in the spring?
Well, she's going to get her chance, isn't she? But... Look, personally, I think it's a bit early to be starting beating the chest saying, oh, here's an Oaks horse. Pedigree-wise, it's a little unusual. She's by Sir Prancelot, who's a leading sort of 2-year-old stallion and a very quick horse in his own right. Out of a 2-year-old 1,000-metre winning mare who's from a family of basically sprinters, there's one half relation on the page that's got out to 1800, but it was in a pretty slow race. The page isn't screaming stamina to me. Interesting horse. I'm not too carried away with what I saw on Saturday. I think we're going to see a lot better prospects coming through this race. And we got caught up with one of Darren Weir's a couple of years ago, didn't we, Matty, that won, it might have been this race, and everyone went, whoa, there's your Oaks winner. And I don't even know if the horse made the field.
I don't think it did. What was the name of that horse? I've just had a mental blank. But
I think it was out of something purple.
I don't think it did make the field.
Yeah, it just goes to show that it's how do you get from here to there and keep it all smooth. So, but other than that, it looks the part, but it's got to get there.
Yeah.
Could we see history repeat? Would you give Dennis Pagan's 2-year-old any chance to follow in the footsteps of Johnny Get Angry?
The way he conditions his horses, and he's clearly got a bent towards training stayers, he's a horse that might continue to develop and might find his way. I'm sure Dennis will give him every chance to get to a derby, whether it's Victoria Derby or something a little less ambitious, I'm not sure, but he can stay. I don't know if there was a horse in the race I particularly want to follow, though. I think, yeah, the margin was there with the winner, but let's wait and see.
It is a quiet time. We've got the Bletchingley next week, and then things will slowly start to ramp up. But is there a horse out of the meeting? Is it I'm Thunderstruck? Any others that you want to follow?
Oh, I'm Thunderstruck, without doubt. I think Dirty Thoughts was good as favourite in race 7. She was, again, the money was really strong for her on race day, so said that she was going to race well. She did. I just think 1,000 was too short. I reckon she might be the sort of mare that Matt and Simon just get fit early and maybe aim up towards a Cochrane just to give her that chance of landing that group win. I could see her going on that path and having an impact.
Yeah, all right. Well, did we get any reason why De Graves was scratched? Was it just a little cold?
Not sure.
I know you were big on Canane. Any fallout from Canane?
Stewards report. Had an issue.
Same as you.
Had a big issue.
You had a big issue.
She was a true variant too, though. I thought, no, this is going to be a disaster. And it was, but anyway.
Last one before we take a break. What do you make of Chabal's return, Sharky?
Solid. Enough for a horse that's been off the scene for a little while. And, you know, gelded and everything else. First up, beaten just a tick under 2.5 lengths. I think it's solid. It probably confirms where he's going to be, you know, around that listed to Group 3 range, I think. He'll be right as he gets fitter.
Time for a break on The Verdict. After this, we're going to have a chat about the Sydney-Melbourne situation and the Spring Carnival. We want your thoughts. SMS is 0416 90 50 52. Put a thought on RSN's Facebook page and also on Twitter as well. We'll also talk about some of the big international racing as well. All that still to come on The Verdict.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Aryan Power, though, takes over now from Colony Queen in second place. They're being chased by Spanish Archer. Montathers found nothing. Then comes Pirate King, but finding plenty is Aryan Power, driven by a length and a half to Colony Queen in second. Then Spanish Archer. Oh, what's going on here? Aryan Power's been eased off. Oh, goodness me. And Colony Queen has won it.
Oh, we have some very, very bad beats. But if you were on that horse at Doncaster over the weekend, I feel for you because we've seen it before. Very rarely, the jockey mistook, and it was an apprentice, Mark Crean, mistook a pole. It might have been the 100-metre pole when the horse is going to win easily as the winning post, and he eased it down. He got a 28-day suspension. For punters who were on the horse, you did your money cold.
What about the roar of instant disapproval from the crowd? What sort of a crowd did they have at Doncaster? It sounded like there was a million people who twigged it exactly the
same
time.
Well, it was the $3.10 second favourite, so yeah. A fair few would have backed it.
But I went to an obscure jumps meeting at Leicester on a Tuesday once when I was living in the UK, and there was about 5,000 people there, so they can draw a crowd to an obscure meeting.
Unbelievable. Feel for anyone. 28-day suspension. So, young apprentice Mark Crean, he won't be making that mistake again.
28-day suspension and 10 years of eternal shame.
Well,
embarrassment.
Reece McLeod still gets mentioned.
Charlie Swan is still brought up a lot too.
Exactly. Boys, there's been a lot of discussion about the announcement. If you've been living under a rock, last Friday, Racing New South Wales announced a new $2 million race called The Invitation, which will be run on Cox Plate Day in Sydney. It will be an invitation-only race, open to Australia.
As the name would suggest.
And New Zealand horses, fillies and mares, over 1,400 metres. In addition to this new $2 million race, Racing New South Wales also announced via a press release, the George Main will rise from 500,000 to a million, the Hill, 500,000 to a million, and a couple of 2,300 metre handicap and 1,000 metre handicap on the Hunter and Gong days of $300,000. A lot of discussion, a lot of debate, which is great. We like to have debate and discussion in the racing industry. And once again, it seems to have been divided by the Murray. Those up north are all in favour, and those who are down here in Victoria, for the most part, think that once again this is an encroachment and attack on the Victorian Spring Carnival because it is wedged before the Empire Rose, a traditional race there. The increase of prize money of the Hill Stakes is on the same day as the Turnbull, run over the same distance, slightly different conditions. But is this, in your view, a direct attempt to keep the better horses in Sydney rather than coming down to Melbourne for the Spring Carnival? And if so, is it to the betterment or the detriment of racing as a whole?
Interesting you say the Murray, because there's two tweets here that I think sum up both camps. So I just want to read out both because it's sort of crystallised it. The first one's Murray Canallan, and the second one's Dale Monteith. So Murray representing the argument A, competition is a healthy thing. For too long, racing sat back and did nothing off the back of tradition. Look where it got us. It's amazing how tied in knots people get over PVL, Volandis. His job is tied to the health of New South Wales racing, not how good the Melbourne Spring Carnival is. So that is a popular argument. Dale Monteith, former VRC and MR Mooney Melbourne Racing Club executive, has Australian and New South Wales racing benefited from the Melbourne Cup Carnival for more than 150 years? Question. New South Wales punters bet on it, and New South Wales racing benefits with distributions from Tabcorp, same as Victorian punters wager on New South Wales racing and Victorian racing benefits. Which races will races grow or divert turnover with these new races being implemented? So Dale's basically saying everyone benefits from the mighty success of the Melbourne Spring Carnival as the shop window for Australian racing, a la Royal Ascot, Wimbledon for tennis, and all these other things. So he's saying every jurisdiction within the same demographic benefits via the success of the biggest thing you've got. And the biggest thing we've got is the Melbourne Spring Carnival. The second biggest thing we've got is the Sydney Autumn Carnival. And the better they are, the more everyone benefits by wider engagement with horse racing and even things like tourism and all sorts of income streams. So they are the two, basically in my mind, they are the two arguments. My position is to agree with Dale Monteith and not necessarily agree with Murray. So that's where we're at with it.
I understand that Peter Volandis is doing what's best for New South Wales racing, and I accept that, and that's fine. And improving prize money for existing group races and everything else, great, fantastic. I think that's good. What I don't understand, and I think it's a bit of a headline grabber more so than anything with any real purpose, are these pop-up races. Seriously, like an invitation race for mares with no black type a week before the Empire Rose, which is, you know, it is the grand final in the Victorian Spring Carnival for fillies and mares. It's just, I don't know. I don't get it. I'm not impressed by it. I try and look at it from a direction where I say, wow, yeah, I get what they've done here. I just don't understand it. Yes, it's disruptive and everything else. Well, that's great. But so's, you know, going out on the highway here and putting nails down on the road. That's disruptive. It's not necessarily good and disruptive. We are a small racing jurisdiction. Australia is isolated. We don't have many other countries around us like the UK, and horses don't regularly go here, and they're all to all different jurisdictions. We are isolated. I would have thought a work together model would make a hell of a lot more sense when the sport is already struggling and looking for ways to get relevance and maintain relevance and headline space. I would have thought a work together model would be smarter than a disruptive model that seeks to fracture not only the states and their ability to work together, but the population of horses.
Exactly.
And riders, you know, maximise the opportunities. Don't dilute them.
I agree. I don't think we're big enough and popular enough anymore to split ourselves in half. And I got a call from a leading trainer this morning who was saying, why do you guys keep blowing about this? It's good for participants. More money, more opportunities. Well, it's beyond the participants. The participants represent a fraction of the overall racing product, the attraction of horse racing, where it sits with the community, and how many eyes can you target on at the one time when there's all these other distractions. It is irrelevant whether the participants think it's a good idea. And the other thing too is you whack on these races, well, it's not a greater opportunity for participants per se. It's a greater opportunity for the top 3% who win 80% of the money. So who really does benefit? Just the billionaires get a little bit richer. So of what benefit is that to the racing industry and to horse racing?
Well, you're not going to get a trainer or an owner or a jockey to say that this is a bad idea in reality, because it's more prize money and an opportunity for them to win.
Depends on whether they can think they're on their own self-interest.
And it's also most likely going to be easier to win because these races are going to be weaker. The major races are going to be weaker because, as Sharkey said, the top level competition is going to be split. Now, the issue with this...
But do you think that matters what they think?
Well, they're participants within the industry. I think it matters what they think, but I think it also should be taken with a little grain of salt because it's self-interest. This is from where we sit around talking about this. I think it's great that there is more prize money. I think it is great that there is innovation. Racing needs that. But we need to look at it from a consumer point of view, a racing fan point of view. We want the best competing against the best. It's like in any sport. Chris Roots put it very well in an article in the Sydney Morning Herald. And kudos to Chris Roots because you don't see many comments that, and it's a fair and biased, level article. It's not biased in one way or the other. You don't see many New South Wales journos actually say anything that has a shred of anything against Peter Verlandis. But he sums it up and says, these big days are where Jamie Carr and James McDonald should pit their skills against each other. Where Chris Waller, Godolphin and the Freebans aspire to make their names with the best bloodstock in the land. They shouldn't have to make a decision on which side of the border they should compete, which ultimately dilutes the quality of the races.
Exactly. So I think if you're to reduce it to the most simple mindset to try and explain it, it is the one I use a lot is, would Roland Garros put on a $10 million invitational to try and get Roger Federer away from Wimbledon? Would Newmarket or Shanti put on a gargantuan racing festival in the second week of June because the weather's good and they could, like Verlandis is doing, and disrupt Royal Ascot? Every sport relies on its grand final festivals to be the best shot window for overall attraction to it. That's as simple as it is to me. Nothing else matters to me.
The question now is what happens. And John Massara was brought in as the independent chairman of Racing Australia with the very tough task to try and bring the states together and work more cohesively together and also work on a national pattern so we can have better racing at the top level around the country, not just Racing New South Wales and Victoria. Now, unfortunately, John Massara doesn't want to comment on this because he hasn't sat as an independent chairman on the board meeting as yet, which we'll get to. It's been postponed once again. But he spoke to you, Matt, about a month ago when he was announced as independent chairman, and this is what he had to say about issues exactly like this.
I've been given encouragement from both sides that they are willing to be sensible about an outcome. My discussions with Ryan Kruger, I feel comfortable. I'm having more in-depth discussions next week. And the same applies with New South Wales Chairman and Peter Verlandis. I've made it clear that I want them to respect me as an independent and that we're out there to get a result and everyone's going into this with a positive attitude. Now, I know it hasn't been like this over the last couple of years, but I feel that the time is right to try and get a solution, you know. I don't think anybody's enjoying what's going on. Let's put it that way, and it's not good for the industry as a whole.
So, it seems to me what Peter Verlandis has done is to directly confront John Massara's pledge. You know, like John Massara's come in and said, "Look, I want this to stop," and Verlandis has said, "Well, I'm going to throw another one at you and see what you do about it." So. I understand that there will be some sort of a response from the Victorian industry now that they gather themselves off the floor after the shock of this announcement. So there will be some sort of a response from the VRC, Racing Victoria and so on. But one of the other aspects of this that is so... It's such a directly aggressive and disruptive thing to do is that Verlandis, in putting on the Everest and then the Gong and these other races, said, you know what? And this also parlays down to what the MRC tried to do as well. They said, look, there's vacant space here. Someone has to take it. There's no sport. The skies are sunny. We won't get a heavy 10 at Sydney. He said, we need to explore our best opportunity. And that was basically from November to December. That was basically what the area that he spoke about and the area that he started dropping a few races in that first 2 weeks of November. But this is completely counter to that, and this is 1 week invitation fillies and mares race before our biggest fillies and mares race. Bang, try and smash it out of the water on the very day of the Turnbull Stakes, which is like a crossroad for Cox Plate for 150 years. It's been a crossroad for Cox Plate and Cups horses where everyone around Australia can get their head around who the right horses are. That, what do they call it? Moving day. So then he just pops on an extra $500,000 on a Group 2 race, the Hill Stakes, quite obviously to try and get Very Elegant and one or two other races away from the turn.
See, I've got no issue with that. I've got no issue with him fattening prize money on existing races. It's the pop-up races that I don't agree with. And don't for a minute think that, and I think people need to, it's worth saying, because the whole, oh, you're from Victoria, that's why you don't like it, oh, go Sydney, all that sort of rubbish. We are not for a minute saying that racing's perfect and it shouldn't be changed. And you make a great point about that space in November into December, and that, what a great, good time of year that is, weather-wise and celebration-wise, heading into the festive season. I think we all agree that it could be improved. But surely we improve the sport and that schedule, if you like, of major races as a racing community as a whole, not just old mate does it over here, we do something there, somebody else does something, there doesn't seem to be any thought.
That's not going to change, Shark.
It must change, otherwise racing Australia is just going to...
We couldn't exist.
But Racing Australia had a board meeting which was scheduled to be held on the 22nd of July, 3 days from today. It's not occurring. It is being put back because, I'm led to believe, Racing New South Wales still don't want to come to the table. Now, yes, there's COVID. There is no excuse. You can all meet via Zoom. You can all do it electronically, remotely today. Now, why is Racing New South Wales not allowing the meeting? I don't think Racing Australia has even met this year. Now, I know there's a lot going on, but Peter Volandis is the chairman of the NRL. I can guarantee you he's turning up to every single meeting regarding the NRL to try and ensure that that season continues to move cohesively. Why isn't Racing New South Wales coming to the table for major issues of racing? Because he doesn't believe in Racing Australia. He doesn't care about Racing Australia. He doesn't care about the pattern. Now, Peter Volandis is charged with making Racing New South Wales as strong as it can be. And technically, to the letter, he is doing that.
So his sole charge.
I can understand that argument there, but there's got to be a holistic view about the betterment of racing, because racing is a niche sport.
Oh, my word.
Fighting for eyeballs.
Fighting for relevance.
And we don't have that many good horses. We lose them to Hong Kong. The breeding at the moment, we're not producing champions like we used to, and we've got more races and more choices, at least on the big days in the majors. Let's work together where they can all compete together and we can have the best competition.
Totally agree. And it comes back to my Royal Ascot Wimbledon sort of analogy. And I think that that's... I still find that a very hard analogy to disagree with. That you wouldn't try and chip away at Wimbledon. You wouldn't try and chip away at the Breeders' Cup in America by putting something on over the other state. You know, if it's in New York, you wouldn't whack something that would drag those horses away. I mean, racing all around the world has very small opportunities to capture all imaginations. You need to put every bullet in the gun to do it. And this is not doing it.
The other thing, this race, I mean, it's $2 million, so you're going to get horses, but it is an invitation race, smack bang in between the Everest and also the Golden Eagle. So he may well be eating his own as well, because you could have very good fillies and mares aimed at the Everest or at the Golden Eagle. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a substandard race for $2 million.
But they all
and
are.
What the flow-on effect will be.
Every one of these rich races he's put on, other than the Everest, has been substandard. The prize money has been utterly disproportionate to the quality of the competitors. And that goes against the nature of competition as well.
Let's get some feedback from the listeners. I can't see what's wrong with the state raising the standard of their carnival and putting on better races for the local crowds. More money back to owners at that time of year. Footy season's finished in prime time. They're investing in it. Heaven forbid he looks after his clients and people who pay the bill and people who pay the bills. That's from Travis. Tom wants to know, where does all this extra money come from? There would have to be an area of the racing industry that's missing out on income. Interesting, because there is a trigger point in New South Wales with the takeout. So it's the punters that pay. If you have $1 million plus race, there is a higher takeout on the betting turnover as well. So once again, it is also punters that are paying for this. Another one here, doing a great job improving New South Wales racing. Queensland is starting to take notice and follow suit. Victorians would prefer to whinge. I don't think we've got any issue with them improving the quality of races. It's the actual pattern and where they're putting these racing in. Racing Victoria shouldn't worry about what's going on in New South Wales. Just concentrate on bettering their own product. The bloke puts up a $2 million race, invite only, yet he doesn't shell out for country races where we're crying out for more prize money, or improve the quality of the tracks. That $2 million would be better spent on improving the metropolitan quality of the tracks in Sydney.
Just on that one, I remember MX, the old magazine, had the newspaper had a section called Boring But Important, and what Volandis doesn't seem to want to commit to is the boring but important things, like long-term track renovation projects. I was talking to a Sydney journo yesterday about the reality, and Mike Simons brought this up as well when we spoke to him about why not channel some money into improving their tracks so they're not running these $2 million races on heavy 10s. You know, we all know that a heavy 10 at Randwick with the same rain is a soft 6 at Flemington or Caulfield.
Volandi sees racing too much like NRL versus the AFL. That's from Grant. Any chance you can get Peter Volandi's on for a chat? We have asked him to come on the past. He used to come on. We haven't had him on for a little while, but we will continue to ask. The new Sydney races, are you guys fair dinkum? We have always been blooming with New South Wales for over 100 years. Look at COVID. We are 7 separate countries here. We'll never work together. We need to get over it and move on. Melbourne Spring is clearly the best. Who cares what they are doing? That's from Tim. So, look, I can understand the sentiment. I would just like to see the best horses race against the best. And with these horses and these new races being brought up, we're not going to see that.
There's 52 weeks of the year. We just want 7, and we've had it for 200 years. Volandi's got another 45 weeks to deal with, and he's also got his established spring, early spring, and full autumn carnival to capitalise on. Why does he feel that he needs to bomb the 7 weeks that Melbourne has earned its right to, or the 4 weeks or the 3 weeks with you, narrow it down to Derby Day and so on. So,
all right, we need to take a break. We'll get to a few more SMSs after this as well. Give us what you think. Do you like what we're seeing, these new pop-up races and increased prize money during the spring? Does it entice you to want to punt more on both Sydney and Melbourne, or do you think you would like to see a bit of free air on the biggest days here in Melbourne's spring carnival? All those thoughts and more coming up on The Verdict.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
And it is Snowfall. Away she comes from Nicest Willow and then Divinely inside the final half furlong. And it's Snowfall gone further and further away. Is winning back-to-back Oaks Classics for Aidan O'Brien, ridden by Ryan Moore. Second Divinely, third is Nicest.
Well, how good is Snowfall? I think in the 100-year history, Shark, that was the greatest winning margin in the Irish Oaks, following on from the demolition job that we saw earlier in the British racing season as well. Where do you rank Snowfall in the European order at the moment?
She's the most exciting horse in Europe at the moment. I don't know about the best or whatever else, but she's the most exciting. It's free money with Snowfall at the moment. Take whatever you made on Saturday, as I said to a mate Saturday night, just put it on at the $1.22. It's better than bank interest, wasn't it? And it was a great watch, and I guess Deep Impact's last great champion, potentially, that we're witnessing in front of us with Snowfall. But she just ambled up to them in that race, and the further they went, the further she went in front.
I'm not an expert on European racing, but it feels like, and this is with all due respect to Enable and Gayarth, this is the arc market. Snowfall, who's won 2 Oaks races by 500 yards. Love, who's done the same. Hurricane Lane, who won a Group 1 in long shot by 10 lengths the other day. He's the third favourite. St. Mark's Basilica, who they're all talking about being the next Pegasus, $9. Tanawa, standout champion, Dermot Weld. Even down to Lone Eagle, which was massive in the Irish Derby and just got rolled at $17. For depth, and I'm not a complete expert, but it seems to me as though this is the greatest group of...
Where would Very Elegant have been in that market?
$250.
Oh, 200... Michael, geez, you are mean. That's just mean.
250 to 1.
Where would you have had her?
Not, I don't know about 250s, but I don't know if she'd be beating some of those horses.
All right. we'll hopefully get to see Very Elegant down here in the spring.
Not, well, she might be at the Invitation.
In Sydney. 1,400 metres too. Oh, okay. A few other SMSs coming through on the topic, Matty.
Just got an SMS through. It's an interesting one about the Invitation race. The Invitation aspect of the race could possibly raise some concerns. For example, Volandi's to leading trainer. If you keep X horse here in Sydney rather than go to Melbourne, then Y horse would be a good chance of receiving an invitation. So it lends itself to that sort of...
Bit of deal-making.
Deal-making.
Interesting SMS here coming through about Massara being the independent chairman, saying that surely he is conflicted as he runs one of the largest studs in Australia and a two... million-dollar race for mares would be enticing for all breeders in Australia.
So there's no black type. So where's the benefit? There's no black type on it. And that's
the Everest doesn't
racing have, fillies and mares is all about getting that black type.
But what would it be viewed like? The Everest isn't a group race as well, but that adds to the stallion page, doesn't it?
Well, we've seen that with yes. So far, it's just been geldings that have won it, though. Digging on my feet about who won it this year. But yeah, I don't think breeders are rubbing their hands together saying, oh, wow, let's win the invitation and boost our mare's pedigree.
Hey, Matty, we'll talk more about this next week because we're going to have plenty of time to talk about this next week. Next week is a race-free week in Victoria. There's been a lot of differing opinions from participants over the last few days.
Yeah, there's been... Matt Allen had some interesting views and a lot of trainers agree, and I was talking to some participants yesterday about it. This race-free week also is a trial and jump-out free week, and the fear from a lot of trainers is that it will create a total logjam of entries and ballots in the week or two afterwards from horses that weren't able to run. But their stable alone was going to run 15 or 16 horses next week. So there's that issue as well. And the issue that a lot of trainers are having now is that without any jump outs and trials, the VRC are thinking about putting on a set of jump outs maybe 3 days later out of sync on the Monday as opposed to the Friday. Is getting proper jump outs and trials into horses who would normally be competing in the Vane and Cosette on the 14th. So
yeah, it's important.
There is a lot of sort of like unintended consequences of having a race-free week, but now the participants are saying, well, hang on a minute, we want the choice and we want to be able to jump and trial our horses and we can't, and we're going to have a nightmare of possibly ballots and so on, but also 10 and 12 race programs to compensate for the gap, and then what does that do for the participant workload that they're trying to ease? So I don't have a view either way, but the participants are sort of thinking about the consequences now of that race-free week.
Well, it's the first year they've done it, and I think you've got to try something, and we will see what the fallout is, because there's no doubt it will be reviewed as well. Geez, some good SMSs coming through here. Great show again. Why not threat to have an invite, only 8-horse, 2-year-old race on Slipper Day, $3 million prize money. I like this one here that says, when it comes to whinging, you three are wait for age performers. Yeah. Instead of grizzling, Victoria should take the fight to New South Wales. That's from Trevor in Sydney.
And do what, Trevor? Whack on more races like, you know, the All-Star Mile and things. Like, surely we can be more creative than that. Like, yes, boost prize money and all the rest of it, and that's a good return. That probably needs to happen anyway to some races in Victoria. But surely we can think a little bit better outside the box, or at least maybe put our efforts into trying to boost Racing Australia and the effectiveness of that for the betterment of the sport rather than this tit-for-tat garbage.
There was an interesting story that emerged last week about Pakadali and the consequence of, you know, the issue of rehoming horses and whether there's a happy paddock for every horse. Joe McKinnon's written a really interesting first-hand story on ANZ Bloodstock News about what she calls the myth of rehoming. And so we breed about 14,000 horses a year. Half of them are don't make it, and where do they go? And she's talking from a first-hand point of view of that there really is the rehoming issue is not... It is an insurmountably difficult issue where there are no ready answers to the issue of finding homes for horses. She's describing all sorts of incidents of thoroughbreds that are purpose-bred and are all impossible to adapt to a different discipline. So have a read of that story. Mick Kent's going to write a first-hand comment piece for us today or tomorrow about his view on wastage, in inverted commas, and the elephant in the room issue of the fact that we are breeding so many horses that are so genetic, so flawed through genetic recurring issues such as roarers and things like that, and that creates this enormous amount of wastage. And it's quite timely off the back of Joe McKinnon's story, which I urge everyone to have a read of. Just can go to her Twitter handle and the link to ANZ Bloodstock News. Doesn't have a lot of answers, but does point out that the off the track, the rehoming issue with horses is a lot more difficult than people actually believe.
And we're going to talk more about this next week with Racing Victoria as well, about the rehoming situation, what they're doing. And, I mean, it is a huge, huge issue and discussion point because there is a lot of work being done in this area, but, you know, not all of it can be accomplished in the current situation. Next week too, because it is a week-free race, we're going to look back on the year, some of the best highlights. We want input from all of the listeners, and we're going to look forward too. We'll get some of the best form judges in Australia on next week to have a forum about who are you looking forward to in the next racing season, who will the spring stars be. Last one before we go. This one you can help out with, Maddie. Boys, there is a skills shortage. I've been looking online for 3 weeks now, and I cannot for the life of me find out how to get into a course or a certificate to become a stable hand. No wonder there is a shortage. Please help me. Surely there's a link on Racing Victoria or racing.com to lead people into it. Your boys have both done an online course to become stable hands. What's the best way to go about it?
Well, there's an independent TAFE course that's linked to Racing Victoria that my kids have been working in a stable for a number of years now, and it was just Certificate 3, I think it is. So, look, it does exist. I don't know how you navigate through the Racing Victoria website to find it.
Marcus Oldham has some thoroughbred-related courses.
I'll try and work out... I'll talk to Racing Victoria to work out what that course is and what the link to it is. The check bounced. I still owe him 700 too. So
we'll have more information on that. That might be something that we can discuss next week as well, because we've got a few issue days coming up on Racing Pulse next week. Hey, we are punting this week though, Sharky, and you've been in rare form. So we look forward to counting down to Bletchingley Stakes Day on Saturday.
Tip the card.
We'll see you on Friday for Friday Form Focus. Maddie, you've got plenty of good articles coming up today as well.
Yep. Yep.
All right, read all about it at rsn.net.au. Hey, don't go anywhere, punters, because we've got a very nice meeting coming up at Casterton, and we're going to have a chat to Warren Huntley and also Lindsay Smith not far away.